Hi everyone, welcome to our event. This event is brought to you by Datadogs Club, which is a community of people who love data. We have weekly events. Today is one of such events. It's December right now, so New Year. So we don't have a lot of things planned, but you can already see what we have in our pipeline. So there is one event next week. I think there is one that is not announced, so keep an eye on the events we have. So this is the link you can use. And if you noticed, I finally updated these slides. So now it's the new interface. So if you have this button, you need to click on this. This way you will subscribe to our YouTube channel and stay up to date with all our events. And we have an amazing Slack community where you can hang out with other data enthusiasts. So check it out too. So this week we'll talk about stock market analysis with Python and machine learning. We have a special guest today, Ivan. Ivan works as analytics team lead at Google. And he's interested in investing, programming in Python. And he blogs at pythoninvest.com. So check out his blog and welcome, Ivan.
Hi, Alexei. I'm really happy to be here. I can give a short intro of my professional experience and education.
Yeah, we will go into that. I just want to first thank Johanna Bayer, who prepared the questions for this interview. And also, before we go into our main topic of stock market analysis with Python and machine learning, we also need to add a disclaimer here. We usually don't do this, but since this topic is about stock market analysis, it's a kind of sensitive topic in a sense that if you invest something, you do this on your own risk. So we're not experts here. And yeah, so we're not certified experts in the field. So there is a disclaimer. I need to probably read verbatim, so I'll just do that. It sounds boring, but I just be on the safe side. So given that we are going to discuss financial matters, we want to add that we are not certified experts in the field. We do not claim that the material discussed in this podcast is complete nor correct, not at full disclosure of all risks. Neither should anything discussed in this podcast be considered a solicitation, recommendation, or offer to buy or sell any security, financial product, or instrument. Okay. There is one more sentence. So private advisors should be consultant before entering in any transaction. So I had to say that. Thanks, Johanna, for actually thinking about that and preparing. Anyways, so this is a serious topic, also quite interesting. And before we actually go and discuss this topic, I want to know about your background. Can you tell us about your career journey? So what did you do in your life?
Probably I'll start a little bit earlier. I finished two universities. One was about computer science, and another one was Master of Arts in Economics, specializing in finance and data analysis. So, and since then, I always worked between analytics, programming, and real business. And I started my professional experience while working for 4 years as a financial analyst at a big commercial bank. And there I learned how to deal with SQL server, how to write queries, and I built a few profitability models for banking products like loans, mortgages, etc. Then I joined Google in Moscow, and I worked there for 2.5 years, and the position was called industry analyst. I worked with a large sales team that covered only Russian markets, but the position was international straight away. So there are many similar analysts in any country in the world, and we shared our experience very often. I worked there for 2.5 years, and then I decided to move to Ireland. And in Ireland, I also changed my position from analyst to consultant. And this consultancy job was focused on mobile web. I learned how to optimize UX and speed for a mobile website, how to pitch new technologies like progressive web apps, accelerate mobile pages, and best user experience in filling lengthy forms. And after 2 more years, I changed my position to my current role. I returned to the analytical role. I work for a large sales team again, covering slightly different product, but now the role is about all European markets, Middle East and Africa, and it's even more global. So we do participate in global product managers meetings and planning. That's it. That's my short professional experience.
So you mostly worked at Google throughout your career?
Yeah, for almost 10 years now.
10 years. That's really impressive.
I'm feeling like a dinosaur here. Many new people come in and leave in, but I'm still here.
It's amazing if you can find a place where you can constantly grow. So it's impressive.
Yeah.
And grow and not feel bored.
Yeah, it's a lot of opportunities and changing positions. 3 positions at Google, it helps as well, because it's all different roles.
And now as an analytical team lead, you probably also manage people. You work as a manager.
Not really. So it was an experiment for half a year. I prefer to be like an IC, what we call individual contributor. For me, it is easier to focus on complex projects, while a people manager is a very different role. So I'm trying to stay away. I was offered for a few times, but I want to drive IC projects for now.
Didn't like it?
It is very different. I think I'm losing focus. So if you need to talk with 10 people and it's a weekly catch-ups, you just can't drive any individual projects. And I have so many things that I want to do, like complicated ML projects or just analysis. So I prefer to drive direct business impact.
As an analyst, you can do machine learning projects.
I can though. So it's not very often here for a business intelligence analyst, and they are hard to do, but there are no restrictions. If you really want to do this, you can do it.
Okay, that's cool. I see why you stayed there for so long. Because like there is such a variety and like we don't really have any limits. If you want to do machine learning, nobody will tell you, hey, you're an analyst, you're not supposed to do that. You just go and do it, right?
If you can prove that there is a business impact, if you can simplify and make your stakeholders interested, and this is actually something that is very valued by direct clients, and you bring incremental revenue, so they will be happy to have this.
Yeah, interesting. And how did you become interested in investing? Was it related to your education in economics or to something else?
Yeah, I'd say it started while I had a few courses on banking, financial markets, asset pricing. I read a lot of research papers about it. I think it was a good and a bad thing. A bad thing it was because we had an idea that all markets are efficient and you can't get any arbitrage. So I didn't use any of that knowledge for some time, but I continued reading some books.
May I stop you? So what you said, all markets are efficient and you cannot use any arbitrage.
Yes.
What does it mean? Like, what is it? Arbitrage is like when you buy and cheaper sell more
expensive. Kind of riskless revenue. So that's if you want to trade and if you want to make any gains, so if you do it without any risk and with 100% probability, that may be considered as an arbitrage. So that's there are scientific papers that say that markets are weakly or strongly efficient, that all arbitrage is taken away by big hedge funds, big companies, and as an individual investor, there is no or a very small opportunity to do that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But still, there are many people who are trading for their personal investments, and they can do some profits, like 5-7% yearly profits in S&P 500 in the last 20 years, which is probably much higher than you can get 0-1% just having your money in the bank.
Okay, so you were interested in that, but you thought that markets are efficient, there is no arbitrage, so you didn't do any investing, but then you figured out that it's actually possible. Right.
Yeah. And at some point, I wanted to have a pet project. So I wanted to test new technologies and wanted to have something in the internet, like create a website, publish some articles, record videos, and my natural selection of this pet project was to create a blog about investing. And after writing articles for a year or so, I started doing real investing.
Ah, so you weren't investing. So first you were learning, you were blogging about that, and then you understood, okay, now I know enough. Let's actually try that.
I had some theoretic knowledge from the university, but then I wanted to check all of that. So I wrote programs in Python. I managed to get the data. I could see within simulations that I can have some profits, even expected profits. So I said to myself, now I should do this. I should try it. And actually, this works as a self-enforcement and self-commitment, so that if I invest my own money, I will spend time on this, even if I don't have time left or no power left after my normal workday.
Can you tell us more about this? So you said like you figured out how to get data and how to do simulations. And maybe you can tell us more about like where did you get that data from? And maybe where people can get data now, today, and how to perform these simulations?
Yeah, sure. I can say that my early article about getting data that I wrote 2 years ago is still the most popular article on the website. So please check it out on pythonvest.com. I think the main data source...
The name of the article?
It's something about...
Exploring finance APIs with Python?
Yes, that's right. And the very first link, Yahoo Finance API, it's the most important one. So you can get daily stats or even hourly stats about many stocks, and not only stocks on the market. And in most cases, this is enough to start. You can add on top of that some other APIs like Wandel API or Pandas Data Reader or paid APIs like Polygon.io if you need this. But I can say that it's quite hard to combine all of the data sources into the one data set. And normally I have a fragmented ideas where I use just a few data sources and I want to build some strategy on that.
So what is this Yahoo Finance API? Do they give like for each stock, do they give you a time series or what exactly is it?
Yes, there is a website, finance.yahoo.com. And this API, I think this is not even an official one. So someone is managing that for a number of years. The data looks like daily or hourly or minutes time series, and it is called OHCLV, open, high, close, low, and volume. So these five numbers, they perfectly indicate any time period. It can be a minute or an hour or a day. Sometimes if you're really professional, you will need to connect to real-time stream and have trades in your data, but it's not easily available for a retail investor. And probably you don't need it because it's a lot of data. It's quite hard to get real-time decisions on that.
And you said this is kind of an official data source. What does it mean?
Yeah, I'm not sure that this is supported by Yahoo Finance. Mm-hmm. Maybe it is scrapped, but you can check in PyPy. There is a GitHub repo and 2,000 stars and someone who is not directly related to Yahoo Finance.
Yeah, the AI is supported by Yahoo, but the Python package is not, right? So the Python package talks to the AI.
Probably you're right, yes. I don't know for sure. What I saw that sometimes it is not stable and it has limitations that you can't do more than 2,000 calls in 1 hour. So if you want to scale your algorithm or if you want to have it updated automatically every hour or every minute, probably you will have to move at some point to paid data sources.
But this is enough to get started. Like this, I just checked. It's a web page, and so there is date, there is open, high, low, close,
yes,
volume. I have no idea what these things mean. Open, high, low, close, I guess. Like, how much background do I actually need to get started here, to make sense of this data?
I think now it's like a commodity that you can download an app, you can invest 50 euros, 100 euros, whatever you can buy, and you will quickly understand. So open, it's an open price when trade day begins. Close is a close price. High is a highest price during the day. Low is the lowest price, and volume is just volume of transactions, or it can be volume of money that were traded. So within these five numbers, they won't reflect the whole time series. It can be millions of trades for one stock in a day. It's just five numbers, but generally they are quite good.
And there is this adjusted close, does it mean?
I do not know.
It's like actually the same as close. So like, I don't see any difference.
Most of, yeah. Just if you see adjusted, you always use adjusted.
Okay.
I think that's for our purposes, when you do analysis and trade not 1 second before previous data received, it's not very important, because there will be some time past, like a few minutes, few seconds, and the price will be different for sure. So whether it is adjusted or not, it's not that important.
Okay, so right now I opened your article, and in this article there is a section about Yahoo Finance API, and then there is a link to finance.yahoo.com and quote from Pfizer Inc. And I see all these numbers, open, high, low, close, volume, right?
Yes.
What kind of analytics, what kind of analysis can I do on this data? How can I use it?
So, for example, you're interested in some stock or in some vertical that you're following few stocks, and you can treat it as a time series that can be growing, neutral, or declining. And you can try to make profits from any trend that you can see. Probably the simplest strategy can be like mean reversion strategy, that if you see that your stock is going down, and at some point you will expect it to be back again to the previous historical mean, which not always happens, but oftentimes it happens, and you can build some simple or not that simple strategy on this time series, so that you want to predict when it goes back and you want to buy lower and sell higher. That's how you make some profits.
So if I understood correctly the strategy, so what I do is I look for, so I have this data, right? So I have high and low. I probably need some sort of average for the day. So maybe it's just the average between high and low, right? So that I have that for each day. And then I see what is the overall mean of the time series, right? And then I see, okay, right now it's going back. So then I can expect with certain probability that it will go back to the mean, right? So it's low, and right now it's below the mean. It will go back to the mean. So now I can buy the stock, right? And expect that it probably should go back.
Yes, mm-hmm. That's correct.
And while an individual stock might not go back, overall, if you apply it to, I don't know, 10, 20 stocks, then like it will kind of average out, and the overall effect will be that most of them go back to the mean, some of them don't.
Yeah, that's why you need simulation, and that's why you need predictions, so that you can't guarantee 100% that it will go back. But if you're correct in 60, 70% of chances, and your winning deals are actually covering your losses, then you make some profits.
So I have two questions right now. So first the question is like, okay, now I see losses. What do I do with them?
That's a very good question. So I started with the ML trading, and I didn't have any risk management system implemented. Risk management means that normally if you see any losses, you need to have some tolerance for losses. So it can be 5%, 15%, 50% losses if you trade crypto. So that you shouldn't be trading with your gut feeling, but if there is any losses higher than your threshold, probably you need to sell your position straight away and fix the losses. But it again depends on your strategy. So if you need to simulate and test that. If you trade with this losses fixing strategy or not, it should show you that you have better returns overall. Because you may sell when it went just below 10% drop and then it came back. So maybe sometimes it is better to sell, sometimes it is better to wait. So there is no real answer, but what I can say that many traders or professional market participants who treat this as a full-time job, they have these risk systems integrated so that they don't need to think when and how to trade. It's all algorithmic.
What if I don't sell? What if I don't recover the losses? It means I will not be able to use the money from selling this stock to buy something new, right?
You will receive just less money. Probably you will be able to sell it if markets are not closed. Sometimes when it's a big volatility, markets are closed and you can't do anything. But in 99% of cases, especially if it's a big market like American Stock Exchange, they are always open. You will receive less money and it will be much harder to return to the sum that you had previously.
I just heard somewhere, I think it was a podcast I was listening to, they were talking about investment too, and they said that the best strategy is always hold. Like, okay, yeah, you have like some shares, you see they are dropping, just don't sell them. So they will come back in 2 years maybe, and you will still earn money from them.
Yeah, that's generally, it's a good recommendation if you're not a professional trader or if you do not have daily robo trading bots. So if you're a long-term investor, you shouldn't be looking in a short fluctuations that can be irrational, that can be connected to some news published. So if you're doing these accidental behavioral moves, generally they are bad. So that's if you're just an average person, it's always better to have a long-term strategy. And that's what I did when I didn't have a risk management system and when I didn't sell some of the stocks that started to drop and I had to sell them at some point of time and I had losses. I changed my strategy into a passive strategy where I have a few funds, large exchange-traded funds that I invest in and I do not rebalance them. I decided once what should be a portfolio allocation. And now every time I have free money that I want to invest, I just buy exactly the same weights for a small number of stocks. And they are very, very long. So I hold them.
Okay. I actually got lost a bit. So you said many things like long stocks, rebalancing, strategy, portfolio allocation. We probably should talk about that later.
Sure.
One question I still have is, so we know how to get data from, for example, Yahoo Finance, right? Then we talked about doing some analytics on that, and the easiest analytic is this mean reversion strategy, right?
Yeah.
So we can see if something is below historical mean, we expect that it would recover. And then we also talked about risk management strategies, like, for example, if we go, how much can we tolerate the price going down, right? Okay, we have all these components, which is probably enough to get started, right? And then there is this important thing you mentioned is simulation, right? So I have some, you know, pieces in place. I think overall it would work. So I have this strategy, I have this risk management strategy. How do I actually test it? How do I verify that if I put real money to this thing, it will not deplete my bank account?
Yeah, that's a usual thing when you deal with train test validation data sets. The only thing is that you can't do, as a data engineer, data scientist, you can't have them sorted in a random order. So I always have a validation data set. It's the latest data that is seen, and the model never sees this data. So if you do simulation, you need to make sure that the model didn't see not only those numbers around it, 1 hour or 1 day before and 1 day after, because it can quickly learn and it will be a data leakage.
Can you say it again? So like you mentioned, that there is some model, some strategy, right? So it can be a simple analytical strategy, it can be a model, and we use the data, for example, from Yahoo Finance, to come up with an algorithm or come up with, to train a model. And what you said is like we leave the last few days, the last couple of records aside, we don't train the model on them.
Yes.
Right. And then, so this is, I guess, like the usual kind of time series validation.
Yes.
Strategy, right? And then what do you do with these last two records? You test your model on them or?
Yes. I can give an example of the exact thing that I had. So I started from 100 largest US stocks and I made predictions for 1 week ahead. So I tried to predict. And historically, you can calculate future growth from the data when you don't know the future growth, but you have 20 years of history or so. So I built an ML model. I predicted growth for every stock. I combined some of the predictions with some rules like thresholds that predictions should be strong enough. I picked the top three and invested with equal shares. But I didn't use last 1-2 years data for training and testing. When I had that model, I used that model to predict and simulate on the last 2 years of data and see whether this strategy actually delivers me profits. And what I wanted to see, I saw some variations. So there were profits and losses, but I calculated rolling financial profit and loss sum. And I wanted to see this rolling like in the last 6 months that I can consistently earn some money. It can be like 5% or 10% on my capital. That even in 1 day, I can be plus 20%. In another day, I can be minus 10%. Overall, on average, I can consistently earn every single month. And that's an ideal picture to have.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So I'm just trying to picture this in my head. So let's say we have these largest US stocks. We have data for them for, I don't know, for how long, 10 years, right? So what we do is, let's say we train our model for, I don't know, 6 years, right? So we take the last 6 years, not all 10 years. We train our model and we predict what would be the performance for the next week.
Yes.
Right? On historical data.
Yes.
So six, or like 4 years ago or whatever, right? And then we retrain our model, we maybe move 1 day up or, I don't know, 1 week, and we kind of slide this window throughout the entire history of the data that we have, right? And every time we see, okay, for the next week, for the next week, for the next week, how the model would perform in history with all the historical data we get from Yahoo, right?
You need to separate the data you're training on and everything that you're simulate on. Like in the real setting, if you have some model that you need to trade on, so it just never saw this data. You can't simulate on the historical data. If you try to apply that, you train the model 1 week ago or 1 month ago, and you show it the newest data. So that's why I just leave 1 or 2 years data away, and I do not use it for model training or for hyperparameters tuning or for anything else. And after I train the model, I use this model to predict for the last 1 or 2 years. And I simulate that I trade with this model within some strategy that I have in my head. And I can check if it gives me some profits, then I would expect that it will continue working now.
So let's say today is 2023, right? And you want to train a model right now, or come up with some strategy. So you take some data for the last 10 years, and let's say you train only from 2013 till 2021, right?
Yes.
And then you apply your model for the rest of the years, for the rest of like 2022 and 2023, right? And then on daily basis, you see how much this strategy would yield, right, or lose.
Yes.
And then you also see, like, overall, What's the yield of this like? Is it positive, negative? How much you would earn?
That's why you need to compare. Like it should be higher than any other alternative investments that you can get. If you can get 3% in the bank, then there is no point to do any investment trading if you can get less than that. So you need to have 5 or 10% or whatever you get. And that the another thing is that it can be 100 different strategies to trade on the exactly the same predictions. So you need to run actually several simulations, and you need to be very deep in the stock markets and improve those strategies. So they are equally important as to build a good model.
And how do we actually do this simulation? Because we also need to think, like, what is a strategy, right? Strategy is, we have some algorithm, right? And then also, what exactly we do with the output of this algorithm? So in your case, you said, we take 100 largest US stocks, and we pick the three most performing one, right? Then we have sum of money, and we allocate evenly the sum of money we split to all these three stocks. That's a strategy, right?
Yes, and that was actually, there are 5 trading days for stocks from Monday to Friday at a specific time. And late in the evening of a previous day, I got all the data on the closed markets, and I could predict on the latest available day what is the returns for the next week. And on the very beginning of the next day, when the market just opened, I bought some shares that were predicted to grow. But before buying the shares, I actually sold shares that I bought 1 week ago. So it was like a split that every day out of 5 days, I would trade 20% of my capital. Like I had 1,000 euros to invest, I would trade every day 200 euros on a number of predictions that I have. And if my previous week investments actually delivered some gain, it will be not 200, but it can be 210 or 190 that is available for me just today. Mm-hmm. So that was the exact strategy that it's, I did predictions actually every single day.
And so what is not clear is, do you allocate, like at the beginning, you allocate only, let's say, $1,000, and it's a part of the strategy, how exactly you split this 1,000, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So at the beginning, you can maybe take all this 1,000 and invest in these three companies and then see after 1 week how exactly it performs, sell something, and on the money you get from that, buy something new, right?
Yes, that can be the strategy if you invest only once in a week. So if you just invest on Friday and you wait until next Friday, that can be a good strategy. But if you want to trade every single day and you have different predictions and you hope that more predictions you have, more trades and expected return is higher from more trades, then you want to trade more often. So if you trade every single day, then you need to invest not 1,000, but 200 because you don't have more money.
So let's say I'm getting started and I have my data scientist salary. So I think, okay, like if I leave aside 50 euros every day, then my strategy can be like for every day when the market is open, I see how can I invest these 50 euros or $50. And then also in addition to that, the stocks somehow are performing. So I can do maybe sell the ones that are doing quite well and reinvest the money. Okay.
That's not a very good thing because you start to look at, whether they are performing or not. If they are not performing, you are hoping that they will be back. That's why you need a risk management system that you're selling, even if it's a loss, because you have money available to invest for the next predictions. And also you're limiting your downsize of your strategy. So you can't lose like 50% or 20%. You can lose only 10% that you identified. But on the winning part, that's exactly the same. If you see that the stock is growing in 1 month, in 1 week, and you're thinking, it will grow again, why should I sell? But your algorithm says, you need to sell in 1 week. The only exception, and it can be an adjustment to your strategy, is that if exactly 1 week after your algorithm predicts again that this stock is selected out of 100 and it has a very high chance of growth, maybe you don't need to sell it and hold it for another week, but you need to have these predictions. So by default, you're selling no matter what in 1 week.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I see. So you're not holding to the, you just whatever you have, you sell and you reinvest the money.
Yeah, that's if you do ML prediction. Yeah, mm-hmm. That's what people call day trading or short-term trading or like arbitrage trading, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If you have another strategy that's like a passive investment that you allocate once and you hold for a number of years, that's a totally different area.
And there is a question about metrics. So one, so let's say we do this simulation, and I guess for us, what we care about mostly is the money return on investment, right?
Yes.
So it's positive, negative, and if it's positive, how much, right? That's what we care about. Is there anything else we look at when doing simulation or when actually trading?
Yes. So I think there are metrics, like the usual metrics for ML scientists, like accuracy, precision, and AUC. If it's a binary model, you can make a regression prediction and bets for not just a market movement up or down, but for exact revenue that you will get 10%, 5%, 20%. And this is much harder thing to do. But I would say if you think only about binary models, and this is what is different in finance, that I care more about precision rather than accuracy. So I need to guess, I need to make my predictions right. And only half of the predictions are very important for me. That's those that are predicted to grow. So that's why I target precision. And another thing that you need to consider is trading fees. That is like every time you trade, you give away some fees for buying and selling. So actually you need to minimize the number of trades because those fees can eat up all of your revenue.
Yeah.
That is a big consideration for a simulation piece of work.
Okay. So when simulating, we also need to minimize, to take into account the price of the fees, right? The fees. So when we calculate the total return on investment, it includes the fees.
Yes, it can be as simple as that. If you trade 200 euros every day, fees can be normally 1%. So it is 2 euro for a buy, 2 euro for sell. So it's 4 euro. And you need to make at least 4 euros in profits in 1 week to cover your trading fees. So you just need to be not just positive, but positive higher than a specific threshold.
And we talked about machine learning models and specifically binary classification models. So what is typically the variable, the outcome we try to predict? Is it if the stock is going to grow?
Yes, it's I calculate a growth rate in 1 week for the next week or for the next months, it depends on the time period that you're trading. Let's assume it's 1 week. And I can see that if it is growing more than 0 or more than 5%, then I define this outcome as 1 as a positive growth. And I have a different definitions. If it's just growing up or down, it is very balanced classes, 50-50 more or less. It is better to easier to predict, but probably your financial result won't be that perfect because sometimes you will guess correctly on the stock movements, but your trading fees will eat all of your revenue. That's why I try to predict growth that is higher than 5%, for example, in a week. So that's it's unbalanced problem that probably it's only 20% of cases that have this. It's harder to build a model to predict this, and maybe even different features are important. But now I'm having, hopefully, a better financial result, but it's all need to be simulated.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned features. I assume everything we talk about is based on the data we saw, we talked about, right? Which is open, high, low, close, and volume, right?
Yes, this is the most fundamental data set. It can be like 100 stocks. It can be some other data sources, but this one is maybe 70% of all features that are the most important ones.
How do you build, like, let's say we want to build the simplest possible model for that, but still use machine learning, like build a logistic regression or something else. How exactly would we design the problem, right, in order to predict this growth of 5% or more? Like what kind of features we would use, how exactly, what kind of model we would use, how would we prepare the data?
Yeah, so we get all the historical data available. We generate some features like whether the stock is growing 10 days in a row, whether there are some patterns like a huge drop or anything else based on the historical time series. And then you treat every observation like only one observation that you have. Just for today, what information do I have based on today's data and all previous information from a number of days, weeks, or years? So I get like 200 features, whatever I can come up with. And I try to predict the growth more than 5% in a week, and I can generate this from the data because I see what happened in 5 days. But I do not show this to the model. It's something that I want to predict what will happen in the future, in the nearest future. And I treat these observations as independent, which is not correct. Like stocks are generally dependent to each other and also dependent day to day. So it is a simplification, but it works somehow. And you can have some profitable strategies.
So with these features that we generate, we can train logistic regression or XGBoost or like
yes.
All these classical ML models, right?
Yeah.
We don't even need to use any time series, specific time series models here.
You don't. And I think I have plans to use LTCM or recurrent neural networks, but I really doubt that they are much better. So that you can tune simple neural networks with so many parameters or XGBoost so that you will be probably of a good baseline model quality so that you can apply for a number of strategies.
And when it comes to time series, some time ago, I think it was a very long time ago, but I was quite actively following Kaggle competitions. And I remember, so it was before like LSTMs really took off. But back then, like still the models that were winning were XGBoost and so on, like for time series competitions.
They're still the same models on Kaggle. And that was a good revelation for me that actually you need to work a lot on your features and area understanding rather than a very complicated model that you can't debug and you can't understand what happens inside. That's why I spent a lot of time on features explainability and trying to really feel that connections, why this or that feature is the most important one. What are their examples that this feature actually influenced on the stock market move?
Okay. So the features are, from what I understood from our discussion, they're simple statistics, but calculated over a period of time. So let's say, was the stock growing in the last 5 days, 10 days, 20 days, 30 days, right?
Yes.
Then you can calculate like, I don't know, many different features like that, or could be the percentage of stock growing, could be, I don't know, average stock price, could be the trend, right? All these features. And then you just throw all these features into your model and then you see what is important, what is not. And then you figure out like which features are useful, which are not. And then you said explainability is important. So then you can analyze all the features yourself. And okay, it makes sense that the model goes for that feature because reasons, right? You can understand like, okay, this feature Because you handcrafted this feature yourself. You understand how it's built, what it's doing, and you can relate to why XGBoost decided to go with this particular feature as the most important one, right?
Yes, and that's why simpler models are better, because for the logistic regression, you have features importance straight away. Or for decision trees, you can see the steps that it takes. And especially if the model is wrong, you can see why it is relying too much on this or that feature. Probably you need to generate 5 additional features and you have some bias. You are missing something. The model is not capturing this big movement and thus predicting incorrect.
I'm also curious about deployment. So we discussed all the strategies, we discussed simulation. For simulation, you don't need anything but for the actual trading. Like, let's say if now we have a strategy, we tested it with simulations, it's showing good ROI. How do I actually start using this? Like, do I just simply have a cron job on my laptop? Do I rent an instance on AWS where I have this cron job? What are the possible options?
So that's exactly why I enrolled into your course about all these deployments and cron jobs and Lambda functions and running a web service. For me, it was just a trained model, and I clicked the button every day and had some predictions and tried to think about it, read some news. So I do not feel very confident on fully automated trading. So I would like to have some step, a manual step of checking, while there are not many trades to be made. But ideally, yes, it should be a data flow, ETL or whatever, and cron job or Airflow to launch these cron jobs and recalculate, get all the new data that you have, make the predictions, use it for different strategies or one strategy that you have, get the trades descriptions, and you can even have an API connection that can place trades for you. And that is also very convenient because you can add additional things like stop loss. You can place a trade straight away that buy me a stock for $100, but if it goes beyond 90, sell automatically. So when you place that trade, you don't think more about it. And that's what I'm hoping to achieve in a few months from now.
Yes. So now, since you do this manually with the help of algorithm, you have to be really, you have to stick to your strategy, right? Because like you see, okay, the model says I need to sell it, then like you maybe start questioning it.
Yes.
Like, do I?
And that's not correct. Many books prove that you shouldn't be doing this if you participate in daily, weekly, or regular stock trading.
So you just have to follow the recommendations consistently, because this exact strategy is what you used for simulations. You know that ROI of this strategy is that number, right? So you have to stick to that. Like, you really have to be consistent.
You can select some period, like 3 months or 6 months. And if your strategy is not delivering that ROI anymore, probably you need to come up with another strategy. Or you may have different strategies, like 2, 3, 5 strategies. And you can see which strategies are working better in the current market conditions.
And you mentioned the course from DataDogs Club. I assume it was MLOps course, or which one?
I followed MLOps, but now you have ML Zoom Camp, which has a little bit of MLOps things inside as well. So yeah, I used to have only binary and the logistic regression model. Now I have decision trees and XGBoost and neural network. So now I have many more models. And now I can say, okay, if I hypertune them, how important is this hypertuning, how it influences not only on accuracy, but also on the final simulation results. But MLOps, it's an important thing. You have another course in January. I will sign up for it too.
Yeah, that's a data engineering one. Yeah, that's amazing to hear that you find this useful. Yeah, it's very pleasant to hear too. Yeah, so since we talk about the course right now, the students of Machine Learning Zoom Camp are doing project. And then there is another project we will have in January. Or maybe you have some recommendations if somebody, some of the students want to use to build a model on financial data. what's the simplest thing they can do? Just go to Yahoo data, get CSVs, and go ahead and try that?
Yeah, sure. Or just install this app. Don't think too much. Don't read 100 different books, but try to design. If you're an analyst, you will see opportunities straight away. If you follow one or two companies or a specific vertical, you will think about it. But you need to do a simple step and start actual trading, and then you will have plenty of ideas of what needs to be done. And then all of the materials with the simplest but working models, ML models, actually are a very good fit for this task. What is interesting with this problem is that you probably won't reach 80 or 90% accuracy, never. So this is a real world problem. It is hard to solve, and this is a challenge.
And probably we have, in this episode, we have talked enough about different things that for them, for the students, it's sufficient just from listening from this episode to go and build the first model, right? But yeah. If you want to learn more, would you say that your website, Python Invest, is a good source? And what actually people can find there on your website?
So it actually follows the same path that I was exploring. So I started with financial APIs. Then I thought, okay, probably news are important. And I added news API, but it was kind of messy and it's very hard to trade on it. And it's sentiment analysis, which is not necessarily connected with the real returns. Then I had earnings per share, which is a fundamental metric, which you can't get through the free APIs. And I had to build to write a scraper. And actually from Yahoo Finance website. Then I said, okay, I built some model. I need to allocate between different stocks, not equally on top three predictions, but maybe like you can differentiate those three predictions. Your model predicted that they will grow. But what is important that sometimes you can limit your down movement just by investing 10% in one stock, 50 in another, and 40 in the third one, rather than invest in 30, 30, 30. So that came portfolio allocations. So that's a natural flow. And so I have 13 different stories. And I try to construct them with TLDR and with major results first, so that you don't need to go very deep into code and data sources, and you can understand the idea before you read the whole article.
I just included a link to our description in the live chat. I check your website and I see that there is a thing called course, and it's a 6 weeks bootcamp. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, I have this link for a year or more, and it's my hope that I can launch it soon. For now, it's just an email subscription, and I get people interested. It's a constant trade-off for me, and that's whether I should wrap up everything that I learned and package into some course and spend a few months doing that, or should I go and write a new article, apply new models for my personal trading. And what was working so far in the last 2 years for me, it's a personal trading. So for a course, probably I need some collaborators, or I just need to replicate your mechanism of a peer-reviewed thing. So I really liked your course, or collaborate with someone else with some platform to design that. So I want to think only about the content, but not about everything else. And it turns out that you need to think about many things while doing the course.
Excellent.
Yes. So that's why I have that. And probably I wait until 500 people are subscribed, so that now I say, okay, next year from January, I run it. I'm not there yet, but I hope someday.
Mm-hmm. So if anyone wants to learn more about that, there is a course, sign up. And then when there are 500 people, we'll have a course.
It's already 200 around, yes.
Okay, so we just need 300 more.
Thanks.
Okay, thanks a lot. It's unfortunately time to wrap up for today. So it was amazing. I learned many new things. Hopefully everyone else also learned new things. So thanks for joining us today, for sharing. Remember, this was not a financial advice. I'm just saying that in case somebody didn't hear the disclaimer at the beginning. But I personally learned a lot. And yeah, it looks actually like a good project for the students of the course. Yeah, thanks again. And thanks everyone for joining us today too.
Thanks for having me. Thank you, Alexei.
Yeah, have a great day and a great week. Goodbye.
Bye.